It's time for Twig This Week in Google. The old gang is back. Stacey Higginbotham, Jeff Jarvis. We'll talk about, well, Facebook, Google. I don't think we mentioned Twitter. And a new robot cafe in Japan. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 489, recorded Wednesday, January 2nd, 2019. I'm an engineer, darn it. This Week in Google is brought to you by Calm, the number one app to help you meditate, sleep, and relax. Start 2019 off right with Calm. For a limited time, get 25% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/twig. And by Cashfly. Give your users the seamless online experience they want. Power your site or app with Cashfly's CDN and be 30% faster than the competition. Learn more at twit.cashfly.com. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, a show. Hey, yes, 2019 edition. Brand new for 2019 with all new hosts. I'm Leo Laporte.
That's Jeff.
That's how we find out, Stacey. We're fired.
That's Jeff Jarvis. We're
replaced right now.
BuzzMachine.com. No, it's just for people who haven't been watching for a while. And Stacey Higginbotham from StaceyOnIoT.com. No, actually, it's the old hosts brought back. It's so great to have you. I missed you all.
You're like disappointed everybody.
No, everybody's happy.
Yeah, they're like, oh, new host. How exciting. And then, it's just them.
It's just them again.
But I do have new resolutions that could really change who I am as a person.
Do you really?
No.
My daughter is doing Con Marie.
I already do that.
Yeah.
Con Marie. Does it spark joy? If not, clean it. Throw it out.
Get rid of.
The something magic of tidying up, life-changing magic.
Yeah. Why am I not surprised that you've done that?
I haven't done. That's how I live my life.
Oh, you didn't need Con Marie. It's just who you are.
I didn't.
So
no.
Do you, like my wife, love the Container Store?
You know, I used to, but now I don't have enough stuff to put my stuff in.
That's what Marie Kondo says. It's not about containers. It's about getting rid of.
I have long said my wife's going to bury me in Rubbermaid.
I do have, and I can't do it because I have a kid. So, you know, sometimes I'm like, hey, Anna, let's play my favorite game. She's like, is it keep or throw out?
There is a tie-in because Marie Kondo has a new show on Netflix.
It is. Have you seen it?
No. Have you?
No, I'm not really excited about watching people
throw
stuff away. Yeah.
It's perfect, though, for a New Year resolution kind of, right?
It is. Yeah. Yes. And I'm curious, like, are these people like super hoarders? I mean,
she says at the beginning of her book, which I'm almost embarrassed to say I've read, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. She says that she's never had any regressions. No one has reverted to their old untidy lifestyle.
I don't believe her.
I just can't believe that. Except maybe that she just doesn't take you if you're going to be the type of person who might backslide on her. Well, oh. Jeff's now going to show us how tidy his office is.
Jeff,
you only have one remote? Slacker. Yeah, that's more like my office. I can barely.
You have a lot of credenzas and stuff.
Well, he's a professor. You have to have credenzas.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and then this is us, apparently. Jeff, we've lost your audio.
No, really?
Oh, he was just silent. It was a silent tour.
You're just used to be talking all the time.
Yeah.
You're saying? Yeah. I never shut up. Is that what you're saying,
Leo?
Not at all.
Huh? Did you have a good New Year, Jeff? Did you do anything fun?
I fell asleep as early as I could.
Yeah. I stayed up late watching a car wreck that CNN called New Year's Eve.
Elk.
With Cohen.
5 minutes. Cohen and.
I've actually blanked their names out now. The guy with the white hair. Anderson Cooper. And Michael Cohen.
Andy Cohen.
I just was painful. It was painful.
It was.
And what did you do for New Year's Eve, Stacey?
I went to a friend's house and we watched the ball drop. Nice. At 11 o'clock our time and at midnight our time, and we played games.
What, you know, the game we used to play in Ohio while we were drinking ginger ale and eating ham salad, which wasn't really ham salad, it was made with bologna, was spit.
Oh, you know what? I used to be a spit champion. The card game where you like flip out the cards?
Yeah.
That's a good game.
It's a good game.
I did
it's
that.
A good New Year's game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be good if you're drinking. No, we used to play that before school in middle school.
Well, ginger ale we were drinking.
When were you in Ohio?
My first wife was from a small town in Ohio just over the border from Indiana called Convoy. It didn't have a liquor store. It had one light. And I remember going to have New Year's Eve with her family. They were very they were Lutherans. And ginger ale, ham salad and spit till midnight. Then you'd go out in the backyard, bang the pots and pans. And you go to bed.
Wow.
Yeah.
We did. So a friend of mine is a wedding planner and she was there and she brought wedding sparklers, which you guys leg up on normal sparklers. I've got to tell you, they're metal. They burn for like 2 minutes.
You can't get those are the old sparklers. This is sparklers I grew up with, but you can't get those anymore because they're not safe and sane.
Oh, well,
so I need wedding sparklers.
Wedding sparklers. They were very pretty.
Interesting.
We enjoyed them.
Yeah, those are the old magnesium.
Did you have any queso?
Yes, I did, actually. We had fajitas queso for our New Year's dinner. Yeah, fajitas queso. Mm.
Wow, that's an awesome New Year.
I won't be having those for much longer.
I know. So see what you're giving up.
What's the plan? Or when are you moving?
June.
6 more months. And then it's a queso free.
We are selling and we will rent for the first year.
Yeah, very smart. So, get to know the neighborhood.
Smart people.
Yeah. Bleep Blurp says in Austin, we can only describe sparklers by law. All right. I'm stalling because I don't know if there's news.
There is.
I think you already got it.
There is news, it looks like. Zach Whitaker has the headline of the year. Zuckerberg, Mark Zuckerberg posted something. This is not the article, but Mark Zuckerberg posted something about what a tough year it was, and how much we're going to work harder next year, and all of that. Year end overview, and Zach Whitaker had a great headline. He said, Zuckerberg's tone-deaf year-end note reads like 1,000 words of patting himself on the back and shows little contrition or empathy for the harm Facebook caused.
Well, I think empathy is something difficult for Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
I truly do.
Yeah.
I think
he's a true believer is, I think, part of the problem. Like, he believes so much in the value that Facebook's adding to the world. It's hard for him to see any harm.
Yes, that's where the empathy comes in.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Though I also think that he's data-driven, and this goes back to his original comment on the Russian stuff and poo-pooing it. And then if you look at the different interpretations of the study that the Senate did, there's a very good story, I think, in The Nation, full disclosure, as I raised money for my school from Facebook. I'm independent of Facebook, and I received no money personally from Facebook or any of the platforms, end of disclosure. But The Nation story, I think, was very good, saying this Russian stuff was actually penny ante, minor nothing, and we're acting as if they took over the election, and the papers are trying to present it that way, but he said the data just doesn't back it up, and Zuckerberg is data-driven. And I think the problem he keeps coming back to is, but the data says nothing really happened, but he cannot say that because
that's interesting.
What he does, right. he gets smashed because people are saying, no, we expect you to be contrite, and he wants to say, but the data.
But the data.
But the data.
So you wrote a piece on Medium.
I kind of had to write something because somebody attacked me because I wasn't attacking Facebook. So it was based on that New York Times story. But the thing was, it perhaps was not the best opportunity. As I said at the beginning, I want to inveigh against Facebook, but this is not the opportunity because the New York Times story about Facebook turned out to be a load of hooey all in all, not entirely. But when they complained that, oh, my God, Netflix is reading your messages. Yes, because Netflix had read, write, and delete access so you could do messages from Netflix. That's how the it works. And so the Times made a big deal. Others made a big deal. And in this case, you know, Alex Stamos, who, of course, was ex-Stamos, who was ex-Facebook, but I think has been an honest broker.
CISO, their chief information security, security officer.
You know, said this is the way things are supposed to operate. We want them to open up. We want them to do this. And you're going, hell. James Ball, who is a really tough British journalist, said that this is the hill he's going to die on. But sharing the content of messages was what makes messaging work. So it was bad reporting from the Times. And the problem, you know, it's a standard media thing. You've heard me do it before, but I kind of went off and I said, all right, I think what media wants out of Facebook is, you know, blaring, they ruined everybody's privacy. They ruined democracy. Facebook has problems. Those aren't the problems. I think Facebook's problems are actually a little bit, one more second, if I could, a little more subtle and nuanced and thus more difficult. Facebook has cultural problems. And part of what you said a minute ago, Leo, was the optimism piece is what gets them in trouble, is they didn't anticipate and they didn't deal with manipulation, thus they didn't protect us from it. Their opacity is a problem. Their secrecy is a problem. Their belief that they can do some crappy things like go after George Soros in private is a big honking problem. So I've got Facebook has problems. Let there be no doubt. But all I'm trying to say is I think media are trying to go after the wrong problems and the simplistic problems in the wrong way. Sorry, Stacey, I'm done now.
No. I'm gonna just tweak this a little bit and suggest that this may not be a load of hooey, and it may not be. The New York Times is trying, and you see it in several of its tech-focused stories. So imagine, you know, the editor there with this worldview, that they're trying to educate people about how they're sharing their data and what that really means, because the tech companies aren't doing it. So you saw that with their location sharing coverage. You saw that with Cambridge Analytica. And honestly, when I look at their coverage of Facebook about like the data sharing they had with Spotify and Netflix, that's how I read this. I didn't read this so much as Facebook super evil. I read it more as, hey, you've been giving these permissions to Facebook and to these other companies
in a way.
No,
that's because you're smart and you knew how to read it. The way I think most anybody would read it, and the way that all the tweets came out and the coverage came out and the TV coverage came out is, oh my God, Facebook's letting Netflix read your messages.
Yes, I think I'm not saying the coverage was a little.
Let me read the headline in the sub.
Sensationalistic. I just think that's what we should expect from the New York Times, because they're really trying to hammer this home. And before Leo goes on, I really think it's good that they're trying to educate people about this.
Well, there's also a certain irony in the article, because they say the New York Times is one of the groups recipients of this largesse. The headline, which admittedly was probably not written by the authors, as Facebook raised a privacy wall, it carved an opening for tech giants. The subhead, internal documents show the social network gave Microsoft, Amazon, Spotify, and others far greater access to people's data than it has disclosed.
That's hooey. That's what I call hooey. That's a journalistic term in journalism school, hooey.
I mean, I think the point, and we actually made this point on the new screensavers a couple of weeks ago, is that in every case, these permissions were granted because these programs needed those permissions to do what you wanted them to do. Spotify needed access to your direct messages so it could send a direct message with what you were listening to on Spotify. That's part of the, that was the feature people were turning on.
And allow you to delete that message from Spotify if you wished.
Yeah. There is a larger question, which is that Facebook neglected to turn off those APIs until this article appeared. So they didn't take it as seriously as maybe they should have. Even though they turned those features off. They say they turned those features off for those companies.
In what, 2017?
2017. But the fact the API continued till the New York Times article came out.
Right. So Facebook's problem in this case was not they're sharing your data. Facebook's problem is they were being sloppy. And they weren't caring enough.
They're sloppy. But I think that that's the lesson. And I think, Stacey, if there's a lesson that the New York Times is trying to teach, that is an important lesson, is that Facebook is sloppy with your data.
Oh, yes. And that is most of these companies are sloppy with your data.
All of them are.
Yeah. They don't store it in any reasonable manner. They don't encrypt it. Yeah. They stick it on public databases.
Is that going to change this year? Is this going to be the year that governments force this and companies, in the face of potential government regulation in the U.S., start paying better attention to this?
Yes, companies are already starting to pay better attention to it. They're getting genuine costs associated with it. So, yes, we're going to see that. And I think it's guaranteed that we're going to get some sort of privacy law. I hate saying that because I feel like our political situation is so unhinged at the moment, but I do actually think it's going to happen. I don't think it'll be a great law.
This will cause some psoriasis in the trio here. But so I had a reaction that probably you won't share to the New York Times story about Facebook and suicide. And there's been a few stories about that in the last week that Facebook, we've talked about this on the show before, has the ability, and they've talked about this very openly, that they have the ability to track warnings of suicide and in some cases specific intentions. And they try to call authorities as soon as they can on this. And this, it's not always perfect. And it can be too late and they can be wrong, but they're trying and they see this as a positive way. Guess what? This works in the U.S. It works in a lot of countries. Where doesn't it work? Europe, because of GDPR. And I said this on Twitter. And somebody, somebody went after me. The same person went after me about Facebook. And
you're leaving off, by the way, Jeff, a fairly huge part of this, which is that when Facebook gets it wrong, it could cause unintentional harm, like precipitating suicide or compelling non-suicidal people to undergo psychiatric evaluations or prompting arrests or shootings.
Okay,
unless it's 100% perfect, it shouldn't be doing this.
No, you're never going to be 100% perfect with anything, Leo. But if one person is saved, their life is saved, that has value.
I think the point we should take away from this, so GDPR, yes. I think if we imagine Facebook as someone who actually cares about people and preventing suicide, then making a mistake feels warranted. If we look at this as Facebook trying to burnish its reputation and using data and only data without really caring what happens, which has historically been how it approaches these things, that isn't okay. And I think motivations in this case matter because we are people. And
how can trying to stop suicide be anything that's cynical?
Because if you fail, the repercussions are big. So I think it's important. Like if I think someone is suicidal, I as a person who cares about them, and I step in and I'm wrong, the person at least understands my motivation. And the consequences are usually far less because I go in trying to mitigate the fact that I might be wrong. If you go in saying my data is infallible and I am going to stop this thing from happening, you're not coming from a place of caring. So people are less likely to forgive you, right? So that's one.
They're not saying that their data is infallible. And turn it around, Stacey. Imagine the New York Times story. Facebook has data that could indicate suicides, but they choose to do nothing because of the fear of PR backlash. People would attack them, right? They're in a bit of a no-win here. And at some point, I think you've got to balance. I mean, yeah, if they're wrong all the time, that's screwed up.
Facebook said that for privacy reasons, it doesn't track the outcomes of its calls to the police. It also has not disclosed how reviewers decide whether to call emergency responders. So there's no review. There should be at least peer review, peer is inappropriate.
Even better is if Facebook said, hey, you know what? We have this data. Let's use this to have a public conversation about preventing suicide and what we as a society in the U.S., for example, and in other countries, they have the power to start those conversations because in a lot of cases, calling the police is not the right way to deal with the suicide, right? So instead of coming in and being like, the data says this, we're going to try to take action. Let's have a conversation. And I think Silicon Valley is terrible at having conversations with people in organizations because they think they know because they have data. And it's hard to have a hard, meaty policy conversation about this. But imagine the headline if Facebook says, and they're smart, hey, we have this data and we want to have a conversation. We found that when we call police, or we have seen the data around police calls to suicide, and they proportionally end up harming people. Let's have a conversation about what we should do instead. And they start to spearhead that and put their weight behind that. That's really interesting.
Let me push it a little bit, Stacey. In some of these cases that were the New York Times story, it wasn't about data. It was about somebody specifically saying, I'm going home right now to commit suicide. I'm going to kill myself. What do they do then?
They do police well checks. That's what they do today.
Okay. That's what they're doing.
But with the scale they have, they can send them to places. It's one thing to do a police well check on Pete Davidson. It's another to send somebody for like some person who is in a predominantly black area of town that is a high incidence of gang violence. Those are going to get treated very differently. And I think it's important to recognize that.
Yeah, and I agree we need a conversation, and I agree that we need to set – that they should want standards set from outside. But what I'm trying to say is that, you know, somebody went after me for saying, forget it, GDPR, no, never, ever use this data. And I think that is cynical, and I think that is murderous in some cases. And we have something here that – this has really been a case, not just Facebook, but other platforms around veterans. And it's a huge problem. And if we could together find ways to help people – we should try.
All right. Let's do a hypothetical. A lot of TVs these days have cameras on them, and AI is getting much better at, we know this, reading micro expressions. Humans maybe sometimes sense, but can't read accurately. Let's assume AI got really effective at interpreting these micro expressions. Your TV could watch you and accurately predict when you were suicidal?
I'm going to say no, and here's why. Because there is a key difference. In Facebook, you are publishing.
Posting.
You are saying to the world something, to at least your friends. You are choosing to say something. In the case of your TV, you are not choosing.
But it would save lives, Jeff.
If we allowed it at all, but we don't allow that at all. It's different here because
we may be allowing it for advertising purposes as opposed to suicide purposes. So let's say that might be happening. I think there's evidence it is happening, but they're not analyzing it for suicidal intent or depression. They're analyzing it for whether you want to buy that product.
I don't think it's happening.
You don't think so?
They're not using the cameras. No, they're not using that yet.
No.
They're
using audio. Proposals. For sure they're using audio.
They're using audio not from your home. Vizio was using that, but the FTC was like, hey, stop. That's not cool.
That'll happen eventually.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've seen proposals as far back as 2009 for, you know.
CR1 in our chat room says, his Samsung TV says, sir, you've been watching 30 straight hours of the Dukes of Hazzard. I'm calling 911. But that's the point, is the ability to do so. The argument you just made, Jeff, which is, well, it's going to save a life, then the ends justify the means.
I think in some cases, Leo, people are signaling on purpose, right?
It'll save lives. It'll save some lives, Jeff, but it can also cause a lot of harm for other lives.
I agree, Stacey, and we've got to find the balance, but we shouldn't. What I'm saying is, what was said to me was, no, never, not. And I'm saying that's wrong.
Well,
I agree with you. Let's have a conversation about it. But to say no, never, not, Facebook, lay off, don't do this. You may know it, but we don't want you to use it because we find it creepy.
Facebook doesn't have to do that. If I post on Facebook, other people are going to see, unless someone has no friends on Facebook. Maybe Facebook's solution then isn't to call the police. Maybe it's to beef its algorithm to say, hey, if someone posts this, you like send a freaking notification to the people who click on their stuff the most.
We should point out that the examples that the New York Times uses were in all cases people streaming their suicide attempt on Facebook Live, which just seems like a call for help or something. I mean, that's not exactly seeking privacy. I think I'd be willing to go out on a limb and say, if Facebook detects somebody streaming a suicide attempt, they should immediately call first responders. That does not seem to be unreasonable. The deeper question is whether they're doing a sentiment analysis and that kind of thing and figuring out if somebody's suicidal.
And they talked about this, and they have different interventions. The intervention is not just to call the police, and I don't want to quote it because I can't remember what it was. It's online somewhere. The video is there. They do know more than that. But this story, there was a reaction around, you're right, Leo, that. Somebody streaming their suicide attempt.
And I think they have a responsibility. They probably have a legal responsibility to call 911.
Yeah, if someone's streaming their suicide, then yes, you do have to do that.
And by the way, there were live in this story, there, you know, a couple of lives were saved. In one case, it was too late. Mm-hmm. Which is very sad. They also quote the director of the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline commending Facebook for this. So
Dana Boyd is
But it's talking about two things. It's talking about people streaming it, but it's also talking
sentiment
about
analysis
using data analysis.
Yeah.
But they talk about doing that, and that's the GDPR thing.
Yeah, one step leads to the next. And so you're
right.
There's a discussion needed. There's data that needs to be shared. There's research that needs to be done.
They talked to the director of, and I didn't even know this existed, the Digital Psychiatry Division, whatever that is, at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. He says it's hard to know what Facebook's actually picking up on. This is right after their illustration from Facebook of how text and comment classifiers work and how they're flagging based on text signals. It's hard to know what Facebook is actually picking up on, what they're actually acting on, and are they giving the appropriate response to the appropriate risks? And that's because Facebook themselves aren't saying. So he calls it, Dr. John Toros calls it black box medicine.
Right.
Facebook says it worked with suicide prevention experts to do it. So, I don't know.
I think those kind of things have to be a lot more open.
It's a really interesting question, I brought up the hypothetical is because increasingly we're going to be in a world where these kinds of signals are seen and can be interpreted. And then what do you do?
And we're increasingly going to be in a world where that can be interpreted outside the home. So there was just a story today about maybe it was earlier, it was on Quartz, on the language people who are depressed use,
right,
for example. And you think about things like all the apps coming out. Kevin and I talked about this on our show with CES called Algorithmic Healthcare. There's a lot of data coming out on, hey, I can predict if you're going to get Parkinson's. I can predict if you're in the early stages of diabetes.
Right.
So when you start, the challenge we have, and this is what GDPR is trying to address, is stopping that train before it leaves the station in some ways. Because once you can get that just from listening. Sorry.
UPS guy's here.
Someone's here. Hold on.
I can tell from your dog. Sentiment analysis on your dog tells us you're getting a delivery right now. So, Jeff, what about this? Okay, I'm going to try to put words in your mouth, Jeff. Let's see if they fit.
That's never
happened. It's possible to move too quickly to stymie this. It would be a better thing to do to watch, learn, discuss, consider the policy implications for sure. But I think you're worried, and I'm not sure. I think I would agree with you that you can also move too quickly.
Move too slowly and too quickly, both.
Yes.
And to be fair, GDPR lets you, if you opt into it,
right. They
let you use this data. Just everyone else is like, oh, it's too expensive. We don't want to mess with that. Let's just say no. So if you say to someone, hey, I really want to study this, I imagine a lot of people would self-opt into this. And you just have to design something with that in mind. And what's happening now, and this is what I think a lot of people who just are like, oh, GDPR, now we can't do anything. Oh, laws are in the way. We can't do anything. I think that's you can't do it without difficulty.
Yeah, but I also think that there is also perhaps a rush to shut this stuff down, maybe.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
That's the techno panic you always refer to.
That's what I'm talking about.
I think we all agree these discussions have to be. We have to have them, and we have to, as a society, decide what our limits are on all this.
So I had another. Right. And this is a little this is cartoonish and it's extreme. But I had a case today where there was a story, Business Insider, that Zuckerberg Chan Foundation is one of the things it's funding is putting sensors directly in the brain. So some smart ass, of course, comes on and says, oh, it's exactly what we want. Well, say that to somebody with epilepsy or Parkinson's, right? They're doing it for a reason, but this kind of chatter has damage at some level. And we're making these presumptions, and yeah, we're, I don't want to get into the whole techno panic thing today. It's the beginning of a new year. But I just, this is, I worry about this.
Here's what I would say. And I think the reason there's people are concerned. There are companies doing this out of a sincere desire to make life better. But Facebook, Google, and a few others are doing it out of a desire to make advertising more effective.
That's where we disagree.
That's their business model, Jeff.
You said a few minutes ago that you think that Mark Zuckerberg is a believer. And I think he is. I think to a fault.
Well, I'm not sure what he believes in. It might be that he believes in getting people together just for the good of it. It might be that he believes that it's a good business because when people share, not only do they connect, they also give us information we can use to advertise. And I really honestly believe that what we don't want is companies since we can't know their real intent, we can only know what they do. And what I don't think companies that are advertising supported should be in this business. I think that should be the National Institutes of Health should be in this business. That agencies, that companies that aren't trying to use this information for advertising purposes should not be in this business. I just don't think that's right.
Media should not be doing health stuff because
absolutely. I should not be in the business of implanting something in your brain to find out what you're thinking. That would be the wrong thing for anybody in media to be doing.
Jeez, it's been in there for 8 years.
But I mean, that is wrong because we can't know people's intent. Sometimes people don't even know their own intent, but we can know what a business a company is in. If a company's in an advertising business, pure and simple, they shouldn't be doing this. And I include Google in this.
Yeah.
Right?
No, because again, I'll go to my business. There was a big scandal in Germany the last 2 weeks. A guy for Der Spiegel made up stories. And there was this, and I wrote a piece about it. Believe me, you don't want to go into it. It's boring German journalism stuff. But it's the seduction of the narrative. It's the seduction of our business model to hold people's attention. And we do things in my business where we mess around with people's lives individually and wholly. So, you know, it's not just platforms. It's us too. They just have better tools.
What do you think, Stacey? I've just made up Leo's rule. Is that a good rule?
And the rule, I'm sorry, the rule was
if you're in the advertising business that you shouldn't sentiment analysis business because that impugns your motives.
Well, you can be in the sentiment analysis business to sell stuff to you.
Well, that's what I'm assuming they're doing.
Oh, okay. But
you see what I'm saying is that it's not, you can't, it's hard to
right.
then
you
say,
can't
oh, that's
their
a good
motives.
Yeah. That's a wonderful thing they're doing.
I think
by the way, I'm going to be interviewing this woman in a week and a half, Shoshana Zuboff. I love Jeff.
Oy.
The Age of Surveillance Capitalism. Jeff, it's a thick book, 600 pages. Very well supported with footnotes. She's the first female tenured professor at the Harvard Business School. She's very insightful thinker.
There. Yeah, the Harvard Business School never had a tenured female professor before that.
She was tenured in 1981.
Even so, good.
Well,
Lord.
Okay, one of its first tenured.
You want to know why American business is screwed up? That
tells you something right there.
Yeah,
that's a part. I think. They can do it. I think they would be best. Like, there are benefits to having a giant platform gather data. One is you can get a larger sample population, which is really interesting for public health. I think if you are sharing that data with people as opposed to grabbing it and doing some sort of weird algorithm of your own design without any transparency is when it becomes a problem. So maybe I want my cake. Or I want to have my cake and eat it too. Anyway, maybe I want things both ways, but I do think that the ability to get lots of data and to access data from lots of people, even if it's opt-in, if Google tells you to do something because they think it'll help humanity, I think that could be under the right framework, okay. So I would have a little addendum to your law, Leo.
Yeah, I mean, it was only a couple of weeks ago I said that Google is going to eventually become the AI king. I mean, it costs a lot of money to do it, and it's probably better Google do it than the Chinese government do it. Mm-hmm.
There's no simple rules. Well, we're going to stop them from doing this, and then everything will be okay. We're negotiating norms. We're negotiating rules and standards. Stacey's absolutely right. We've got to do it more in public. In the piece that I wrote, I said that the transparency is not just about admitting your foibles, which is what Facebook and politicians think it is. It's also about there should be, from the very top of Facebook, there should be a view that everything we do here should shine brightly in transparency. We should be proud of what we do here. And if you're not, then don't do it. That's more to the core of what's wrong with Facebook and what they need to fix in their culture. That's transparency that matters in a different way, that says we're making judgments about what we do every damn day, and we need structures to make good judgments about that and do them in public.
By the way, the New York Times headline is judicious, to say the least. In screening for suicide risk, Facebook takes on tricky public health role.
It is indeed.
I don't think that's,
that's not sensationalist.
It's not sensationalist. It's exactly right. It's what we're talking about.
And that's true.
It is tricky.
Yes.
All right. Should we talk about Google?
Yeah. Well, this is Google too, really. I mean, it's all a piece of the same.
Stacey's trying to make us happier here.
No, I'm just, I mean, like at a certain point in time, we go around to the same
We always do. But I predict that this is going to be the year that we will spend a lot of time talking about improved capabilities for exactly this kind of thing.
I hope we have.
And that debate is important, right? We agree on that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree that debate is important. I just think that we're kind of like, we need to talk about it.
Well, how about this? Wielding rocks and knives, Arizonans attack self-driving cars.
Yeah. Yeah, you see that? Yeah,
that's a Google story.
This discussion's working out just fine.
These are the Waymo vehicles going around in Arizona. And apparently there have been 2 dozen attacks on Waymos over the last 2 years. That's not a huge number. That's a month.
The original Luddites did. So, I mean,
Luddites.com. Yeah.
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 We've talked about it before. People really hate these self-driving cars sometimes. I don't know why. People have pelted them with rocks.
People hate those robots.
Yeah.
They kick the delivery robots
and the security robots. Yeah. In one of the more harrowing episodes, a man waved a .22 caliber revolver at a Waymo vehicle. By the way, he was mentally ill. He told police he despises driverless cars, partly because of the killing of the female pedestrian in Tempe. His wife admitted he finds it entertaining to break hard in front of self-driving vans, and that she herself may have forced them to pull over so she could yell at them to get out of their neighborhood.
She was yelling at the self-driving car?
Yeah.
Glad they found each other.
The trouble started, the couple said, when their 10-year-old son was nearly hit by one of the vehicles when he was playing in a nearby cul-de-sac. He says, I don't want to be there. I guess he isn't mentally ill. This was another one. I apologize. He has a different one. He says, I don't want to be their real-world example or their real-world mistake. That's a reasonable.
So this gets into something we don't think about a lot, but as we stick technology in cities, as we, like smart city efforts, as we start taking over more of the world with technology, we do actually risk not having these conversations as like a democratic process.
They're saying we're unwillingly the beta subjects for this. I guess that's a real point of view, right? That's reasonable.
And it's not like, and that's the other thing, like lawmakers did decide this. So could they vote those lawmakers out? Yes. Could a politician run on an anti-tech platform? Probably, but that's not a great nuanced way to think about this. And I think that's where technology companies really need to like wake up and realize that they can't just fall back on data. They have to start dealing with people in all of our horrifyingly messy glory.
I didn't realize that Douglas Rushkoff, who works at CUNY, wrote a book called Throwing Rocks at the Google Bus.
Yeah.
He says in this article, driverless cars are like robot incarnations of scabs.
Douglas, and I love him. He's one of my favorite people on earth, but he's pure Marxist. So it's a Marxist.
Well, it's not a, yeah.
Right. So it says that there's an intervention here in a job economy, and that's what causes the.
But that's why the Luddites revolted, right?
Yeah,
they were losing their jobs to Jacquard looms.
Yep.
And these will. I mean, driverless cars are the future, and I also think tech companies need to talk more about what roles they will have. I mean, I just, unfortunately, it's not out yet, but I filed a story for IEEE about the role of people in autonomous vehicles, and they will have them. They will be remote controlled for quite some time in the future. So will it be a one-to-one? No. But so, yeah, this is frustrating because I feel like a little bit more transparency, real conversation between parties would actually go a long way. And we're not doing that. We aren't even building the tools to do that. So I don't know how to solve this. I'm going to go live under a rock.
I think we need technology that motivates people to moon.
In Ray Kurzweil, in his book, The Age of the Spiritual Machines, this is a great Wikipedia article, by the way, which I found on Pinboard, talked about 2019 and some of the things he expected. Now, he wrote this 20 years ago, almost. Some of the things he expected. He said about self-driving vehicles. Let me see if I could find it. Computers do most of the vehicle driving. By 2019, humans are, in fact, prohibited from driving on highways unassisted. Furthermore, when humans do take over the wheel, the onboard computer system constantly monitors their actions and takes control whenever the human drives recklessly. As a result, there are very few transportation accidents. I actually kind of wish that were the case. Mm-hmm.
Oh, but people are going to hate that. I mean, people hate it now. Anytime we have something that interferes with our autonomy, we're like, screw you. If I want to get drunk behind the wheel of the car.
Yeah, I can do it. It's my right. It's my right.
I was just talking to a guy I know here, neighbor here, and his kids who are a little younger than ours. They said they don't want to drive. They don't want the driver's license. They don't want to do it. They hate it. Yep. I think there's going to hit a generational point where fine. Mm-hmm. I can play my video game while I'm getting there. Fine.
He also predicted that devices that deliver sensations to the skin surface of their users will make virtual sex possible. So.
Well, aren't there those things?
No. Well,
I was about to say, those things kind of exist. They kind of do,
I guess.
Time.
Yeah.
That's why I hate predictions.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard.
The dumbest
right.
job title, the most hubristic job title on earth, this side of Messiah, is futurist.
Yeah.
Really? Not thought leader?
Well, actually, that's what the futurist is. They're leading our thoughts. All right. I have some happy stories.
Good.
Yes. Some positive, I'm sure, somewhere. Some good stories.
The guy who moons Google Maps.
I was going to say moons.
Happy about that.
What?
He moons them.
He right moons
there
them?
There on the rundown. Bloke moons Google Maps. And he's
happy a cheeky
about
lad.
Okay. That wasn't what I was thinking, but it is. You're right under the Waymo story, so I guess we should probably get to that. Delighted. It's not Maps, it's that Street View car.
Street View.
Yes. Yeah. And he's delighted because apparently his bum is immortalized online. This is from the Mirror, so
it looks like they pixelated the brand of the bicycle riding by, but they left his butt. Because the
we didn't expect a butt. That's why.
Exactly. The algorithm did not know to look for butts because it thought that people were going to be nicer than that.
Oh, never.
Now they
know.
Have to write an algorithm. Now some poor schmo has to write a butt detecting algorithm.
And then from the Wall Street Journal, delivery drones, cheer shoppers, annoy neighbors, scare dogs. In one of the world's most advanced drone delivery tests, sunscreen arrives in minutes, so do complaints. This is in Australia, in Canberra.
Speaking
of drones,
yes,
I was amazed by the story in the rundown. I had not seen this further extension, that now there's speculation that the airport closing in the UK, that there never were drones.
There never
Mass
were.
Mass hysteria.
And
Mass hysteria. Hello.
The
hello,
poor couple that was busted, they let them go. They said, no, they had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, that was.
That's horrible. We talked about it because I trusted the news.
Yeah,
my mistake.
Well, that's, I mean, you're not trusting that, you're trusting, I mean, the police officers and the army were saying, I mean,
they said
the news was that it was shut down because of this.
It was shut down for 36 hours. Gatwick was shut down for a day and a half, but there were no drones.
That's
it's still not definitive, I guess, but it's looking like there were no drones.
That's just weird.
It is. Everybody just calm down. It'll be okay.
Oh, I think that that's a metaphor. That story is really a metaphor.
We might have a 30 years war or two, but once we get on the other side
once
of that,
it's over,
it'll be okay.
You'll be happy.
Yes.
You know, this will be a good time
to make you calm.
To mention our sponsor. I see where you're going with this.
It'll be okay.
It's going to be okay.
Oh, I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
We, in fact, have a sponsor called Calm.com.
Yes.
You didn't know that?
It will be okay. There you go.
You didn't know that? You just were saying it?
That was.
That's very good. I'm going to get you 25% off, so you might want to try this. Calm.
I think you need it, Leo.
Huh?
I think you need it. So you calm down and you get back on Facebook.
I actually, I already have it. I have a, I subscribed some time ago. I love Calm. Calm is the number one app to help you meditate, to help you sleep, and to help you relax. And I want to point out that it's not just meditation. It is a great sleep app. Apple's App of the Year 2017. It's the number, it is, was part of their best of 2018 list. But how about, imagine, click on sleep, because I want to listen to Matthew McConaughey reading me a sleep story. Not just Matthew, but quite a few. If you go, you get 25% off a Calm premium subscription right now. If you go to Calm, calm.com/twig, and you'll get unlimited access to all of the content right now, today, plus 25% off. There are guided meditations. And what I like about Calm is a variety of different voices, variety of different focuses. You can work on anxiety and stress. We know that stress is a huge health factor. Get rid of the stress. You could work on focus. There's a daily new meditation, the Daily Calm. I really like it. It's different every day. But the sleep stories are often awesome. How about going to the lavender fields of France with Stephen Fry?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Isn't that a great idea?
It's a very good idea.
I'm going to get one. I have to log in right now to my Calm account so I can do this for you, because I really want to play some of this.
Bob Ross.
It's like Bob Ross.
Yeah, well, it's right there. It's Painting with Bob Ross. It's a way to put you to sleep. It actually is brilliant.
Yeah. You want to hear Matthew McConaughey?
Yes.
It's really good. It's really good. Listen.
Well, hello there. I'm Matthew McConaughey. Tonight, I'll be reading a special sleep story called Wonder.
All right.
Before we begin, as you settle in under the covers with your head easing into the pillow and your body sinking into the...
Oh, I love you, Matthew! So I think there's a few people who would like that. Okay, you don't want that one? Let's see what else we got here.
I want that one. I'm like, yes, Matthew McConaughey, tuck me in.
Here's the Bob Ross one. It starts a little energetic, but it's going to calm down. Calm.com/twig.
Okay. Hello, I'm Bob Ross, and I'd like to welcome you to Series 31 of The Joy of Painting.
Some people, that would put them right to sleep.
Yep.
Wait a minute, I want to find... he has happy little Z's. There's so much nice stuff on here. This is to help you go to sleep. Help you go to sleep. And some of them are real stories. Like, my mom used to read me The Wind in the Willows.
Hi, are you ready for a sleep story? Today, I'll be reading from The Wind and the Willows.
This is such a good way to go to sleep. I'm just telling you. But meditate, sleep stories, they have music. They even have, which is nice, you can just get a page you could put up on your screen. It's very peaceful. And you can just relax. This is the best money you'll spend this year. C-A-L-M calm.com/twig. If you go, you get 25% off a Calm premium subscription. And as I said, it's even more restful. We're going to get you 25% off a Calm. I want them to use my voice because I've been told I put people to sleep a lot. Calm.com/twig. Oh, I love Calm. Don't you feel better already?
See, I told you. That's all we need.
Yeah. Here, I'll play.
Now I'm gonna stop the show right now and go lay down.
It's relaxing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
You'll feel better now.
Here's the
now
daily.
Okay.
Look at this. Look at this screen. Here's the daily meditation. Just going to relax now.
Dreaming. Start by finding a comfortable position.
How about relationships with others? Breaking habits. Winnie the Pooh. World Cup penalty series. Wait a minute. What is that? Wait a minute. What is this?
Welcome to this special meditation session for World Cup fans. Today, we'll learn to soften the anxiety that arises as we follow our team's highs and lows.
See?
The moment of supreme
anxiety. If you're getting stressed from watching too much soccer.
Is, of course, the penalty shootout.
I love Calm. They are so great. This is the greatest company. They're very creative, very clever. 100+ guided meditations, exclusive music tracks too. By the way, this is something that's hard to find, and I really appreciate. Let's see. I might do this. I'm going to get a massage later today. I might just have this playing during my massage. Isn't that nice? It's very relaxing. Very calming. Calm.com/twig. Don't let World Cup soccer worry you with Calm. Isn't that nice?
Don't let Apple's announcements
worry. Yes, don't let Apple's revenue. By the way, they just before the show, the chat room says, Apple's stocks has stopped shit trading. What? That usually is something serious.
Apple, yeah, that's...
In this case, it wasn't that serious. They put out an update to their revenue guidance for the last quarter, which ended December 29th. I guess it'll be another. It usually takes about a month before they get the quarterly results. But Tim Cook just wanted everybody to calm down and just be aware the revenue is going to be down a little bit. It's going to be down.
Which Apple just doesn't do. Apple always lowballs.
Already, the stock and after hours trading is down 7% because Tim Cook said Greater China did not respond to our offers of fine phones. So there you have it. This is why you need Calm today more than ever.
Now I'm too calm to do the news.
I'm so relaxed.
This is when you should tell me about, you know, European GDPR things that I wouldn't care.
I know.
Oh, that's true. Let's see. Well, yeah. There's not a lot of huge news this week. I got to be honest.
Yeah.
So
Amazon's going to expand Whole Foods stores. I finally got suckered into putting the Whole Food app, the Amazon app on my phone. Cause I was at Whole Food buying goods for my Christmas dinner.
Did you actually get any discounts though? Cause they don't put that much on discount.
No.
Yeah. There's,
and all you do is you hold, but you know what? I'm going to tell people use this barcode. If you want to save, just use mine. Prime members get weekly deep discounts and an extra 10% off sales prices. Exclusions apply, and then you see what your savings were. So it shows you your store. Well, that's a pretty good deal on ground turkey balls. Regularly $5.99 a pound. Amazon Prime $3.99 a pound.
Pre-made meatballs?
Or
is it just ground turkey?
It just says animal welfare rated ground turkey.
It's ground turkey. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
sorry, I was just like,
it's a product. Salad greens, 2 for $6, normally $3.99 to $4.49 each. It's some savings. Look at that. Grapefruits, usually $2.50 a pound, now $1 a pound.
Oh,
wow, that's good.
Grapefruits are always cheap in January.
I can't eat them on statins. Season. It would kill me. That's actually something that would kill me right there.
But you can't have
any grapefruit. It would be interesting.
No.
Don't if you, Amazon really? Knew that and didn't even show
statins?
You that.
Yeah.
Don't eat grapefruit.
I don't have grapefruit. Once in a rare while, I'll have a grapefruit soda.
Wait a minute. Before I give out medical advice, let me just see what it says on the internet.
I thought it was like a cancer drug that says you can't do that.
I'm pretty sure.
I thought it just, like,
yeah.
Patients can eat.
Don't eat a large amount of grapefruit.
While taking this statin.
Here it is.
Interferes with.
Healthline.com says why you shouldn't mix grapefruit and statins. Yeah, I'm just saying. And I'm on Lipitor. That's the one that's particularly bad with Lipitor and Zocor. So there. It could cause muscle breakdown.
Well, who says I have any?
Liver damage, digestive problems, increased blood sugar.
Does that.
And neurological side effects, which explains an awful lot.
It does.
I'm feeling sleepy. Okay, this one I am mad about. New York Times. Cooper Quinton, who is from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Our cell phones aren't safe. Actually, I think this is a very important article. Security flaws threaten our privacy and bank accounts, so why aren't we fixing them? This is not about privacy, Jeff.
Well, I didn't even, you know what? I didn't even click on the headline originally because I thought it was another, no. I'm going to give you a brain cancer story.
No, it's actually about SS7, which we've been talking about for years on Security Now. It's the software, Signaling System 7, that runs in all cell phones. It's part of the radio. There have been weaknesses we've known about for years in SS7. Nobody's doing anything about it, and they never have. And he talks about, in 2017, criminals took advantage, for instance, this is just one of many examples, of a SS7 weaknesses to carry out financial fraud by redirecting and intercepting text messages containing one-time passwords for bank customers in Germany. It's part, you know, you've heard about all those stingrays.
Basically, it lets you spoof a cell tower.
Yes.
So if you want to spoof a cell tower, and people feel that cell networks are very secure.
They're not.
So you're like, hey, I'm on a cell network. But like, I was talking to somebody in the security world, and they were like, yeah, we had a CEO of a Fortune 500 company whose cell phone was talking to a fake cell tower, basically, that they had set up. Hackers had set
stingray.
Up. So
it's a stingray.
Yes.
And they're all over Washington, D.C., by the way.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
SS7, which was written in 1975.
Oh. That's older than I am.
It's older than Stacy.
Oh, shush, Stacy, shush.
I'm just saying, that's good perspective. I'm pretty
so
old.
So this is actually...
I have lots of viruses.
I think it's bad to say this headline is bad because it's not quite really the issue is they're a security nightmare. And this is true.
Well, I think, And I used to run up into this a lot when I was writing about technical topics like this. This is hard to like headline and make people care about. It really is because you have to explain so much. So the headline on stuff like this is just a
pain. I know. You know, it was on 60 Minutes 2 years ago.
Yeah.
They showed it being hacked. They showed a senator who volunteered for this. They showed how easy it was to hack his phone. And nothing. A senator, a United States, nothing has happened. So anyway, I mention it again. Not that anything will happen, but I mention it again.
So I'm excited because the story, this was an interesting one from, is it New York Magazine?
Oh, about, this was a good, they've been doing great stuff lately.
That's good because they're charging money for it now.
Oh, no, I got to pay for another paywall.
Another paywall. Court has a paywall now. They have a paywall. Everybody. All the God's children think they're worth a paywall.
But see, they are individually. The problem is I don't want...
Collectively? Nah.
Yeah. Bloomberg. I still haven't paid for Bloomberg because I just... So you're talking about which story on...
How much of the internet is fake? Turns out a lot of it, actually. Yeah.
This is about click fraud, basically.
Yes. And it kind of fits in with this idea that basically bots have taken over the web and... It's we're getting to this like worldview where there are no people and it's just bots fighting bots all the time.
Here is a fascinating statistic from this article. For a period of time in 2013, the Times reported this year, but 5 years ago, half of YouTube traffic was bots masquerading as people. A portion so high that employees feared an inflection point after which YouTube's systems for detecting fraudulent traffic
would begin to regard bot traffic as real and human traffic as fake. They called this...
Oh my gosh. it's like reaching consensus on the blockchain.
Yes. Okay,
sorry.
They called this hypothetical event the inversion. Now, that was 5 years ago. Do you think there are fewer bots on YouTube now? I don't think so. So, and that's always puzzled me because YouTube, viewership numbers on YouTube are stunning and they're so fast. And it never made sense to me. And it doesn't make sense to advertisers, by the way, because it's really cheap to buy YouTube ad impressions.
I have a friend who pays people to juice his YouTube stuff.
Yes. At YouTube, the company says, quote, only a tiny fraction of its traffic is fake. But you can buy 5,000 YouTube views for as low as $15.
But part of the reason this is people reward that. People are like, yeah, I can't even take you seriously unless you have this many YouTube views.
That's right.
I'm like,
yep.
Do you think that for a while there was a story was if you want to get a better deal as a Hollywood actor, if you want to get more money per movie, you have more Twitter followers. Is that still the case or have people finally twigged to the notion that really...
That's a good question. I'll bet. I don't know, but I'll bet not because you can buy them and all
it's
that.
It's so easy to buy them. But that's
I have never bought my Twitter followers.
Neither have I.
I have no Twitter followers. I used to have 600,000. Although I noticed ever since I deactivated my account, that number has dwindled.
would imagine.
It had been my experience that the less I tweeted, the more followers I got. As long as you say nothing, it's the Vanna White effect. People think you're on their side. The minute you say something, people will go, oh, I'm unfollowing that guy.
Sorry, you guys.
What?
Oh, I yawned. Sorry.
It
happened to be actually
you're
looking at
calm.
Me.
This is your story, and you're
Stacey,
yawning.
Matthew McConaughey does that to me all the time. He makes me yawn.
All right.
He doesn't make you buy a Lincoln or bourbon, because that's... He's everywhere on my Hulu right now. I was like, good Lord, Matthew.
Driving my car. These are two stories that I'm going to link together. With little or no evidence to do so, and I'm going to suggest that they point to a larger problem just around the corner. 911 emergency services go down across the U.S. after CenturyLink outage Thursday at noon Eastern. CenturyLink went down.
Which is what again?
CenturyLink is one of the largest telecommunications. You never heard of them? One of the largest telecommunication providers in the U.S. They do internet and backbone services to AT&T and Verizon. You thought maybe AT&T and Verizon did their own? No. So
they do their own. They also buy from
CenturyLink. All right. In any case.
Does CenturyLink buy level 3?
I think so.
Or are they just...
No,
okay.
I think so.
Sorry.
Yeah. So CenturyLink didn't say what caused the outage. Beyond this, it was an issue with a, quote, network element. But it took them an hour or so. Meanwhile, 911 services went down in many areas of Seattle, Stacy, Salt Lake City, Idaho, Oregon, Arizona, and Missouri. Police in Boston, Massachusetts tweeted, CenturyLink outage affecting wireless 911 capability in Massachusetts. Then it came back a couple hours later. FCC says we're investigating. We know what that means. But then, okay, I'm going to tie it to this. A malware attack brought down delivery of the LA Times and the Tribune papers across the United States, including the New York Times on the West Coast. It's a server outage. Identified as a malware attack, which appears to have originated from outside the United States, hobbled computer systems and delayed weekend deliveries of the Los Angeles Times.
So, a couple things. I think we need to have for Harvard Business School folks, right? We need to understand the economic importance of resiliency. And what we talk about today is that is not a priority in supply chains and all kinds of things, because we've only been thinking about the dollar costs of things, right? And that's where I think as we get more technical, we are more reliant on technology. We need to talk about resiliency and start creating case studies that understand the impact of losing that. Because these things happen a lot. And there are companies that design for this. And I think it's really important that they do. And actually, it's a topic at CES. I was really excited to see that.
Good.
So this is just me thinking, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Now, here's why I connect these. They both happened on Thursday.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't want to say there's a boogeyman under the bed or in the closet, but I honestly think that nation states are trying out these weapons just to see what they can do. And I think this is a taste, a foretaste. Yes, there's definitely an economic and civic reason, Stacey, that they should be redundant. But I think there's an even larger reason. I think that this is the next battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Times
and San Diego paper became aware of the problem near midnight on Thursday. Programmers worked to isolate the bug, which Tribune Publishing identified as a malware attack. But at every turn, the programmers ran into additional issues. After identifying the server outage as a virus, technology teams made progress Friday, quarantining it and bringing back servers. But some of their patches didn't hold. I don't even know what that means. It's not like a ship. Some of their security patches didn't hold, and the virus began to reinfect the network.
So let me talk about my friends in the newspaper business. And it so happens I was at the Chicago Tribune, later Tronc, that's the company, when they got their second CMS back in the 70s, and that's how old I am, Stacey. I was doing CMSs before you were born. And they didn't build in any redundancy or enough memory because they wanted more features. We're dumb about this stuff. We're really dumb about this stuff.
Yeah.
It's a bad industry. It's just
Pam Dixon.
I don't know that it was like a Chinese or Russian hack. It could
have been either.
And a disgruntled stockholder.
Yes, I don't know. But Pam Dixon, executive director of World Privacy Forum, a nonprofit public interest research group, said, quote, usually when someone tries to disrupt a significant digital resource like a newspaper, you're looking at an experienced and sophisticated hacker. Holidays are a well-known time for mischief because organizations are more thinly staffed.
Mm-hmm.
This is from the LA Times, which was, in fact, held up on Sunday because of the attack on Thursday. I don't, you know, maybe they're not related. That's just when I see two major attacks like that on the same day of infrastructure that's fairly important, I feel like an alarm bell is ringing. All right, I do have good news, and we're going to get to all the good news, the happy stuff, in just a second. But first, I want to tell you about CashFly, because that's a happy thing. That makes me happy. I didn't get any calls over the holidays that our network was down, that our servers were down, that people couldn't download our shows, because we're on CashFly. That's our content distribution network, and it is the best. It is the best. Give your users the seamless online experience they want. Power your site or app with the CashFly CDN, and be 30% faster than the competition. No matter what industry you're in, if your website, if your content is tied to revenue, give your customers the fast downloads they need with CashFly. It's what we do. Anytime you're seeing a show on our website or you're downloading it from the internet, you're getting it from a CashFly server near you. That's why it's faster. They deliver media-rich content 10 times faster than traditional delivery methods, up to and this is the thing that blows my mind, up to 30% faster than other major CDNs. And by the way, their service level agreement, their SLA, 100%. Not 4 nines, 5 nines, 100 nines, 100%. They guarantee the best user experience for all your customers, no matter where they are, no matter what device they're on. We've been with CashFly for a decade. I would never dream of changing. It was the best decision I ever made back in the infancy of Twit. Join thousands of others like me who trust Cashfly's reliable network. LG does, Microsoft does, Adobe, Ars Technica. No billing spikes either, because they tailor your plan to your needs, to your yearly usage trends. So you don't have to worry about, you don't have to check your bill every 5 minutes, making sure you didn't exceed some number. In fact, on average, customers who switch to Cashfly save more than 20%. So 30% faster for 20% less? Do the math, then go to twit.cashfly.com. They're giving away a no-pressure, no-hard-sell complimentary detail analysis of your current CDN bill and usage trends, and they can tell you if you'll save money. Find out now. Don't live in ignorance. Get the best for less. Twit, twit.cashfly.com. Thank you, Cashfly.
And unlike Tribune Company and unlike major phone companies, I never hear you complain.
No.
No.
You know, you were talking about that Helm email server, Stacey.
Oh, yeah, like forever ago.
I bought one.
You had someone on your show from it, right?
Yeah, so he was on the screensavers, Gilligan. No, that's not his name. Geary. Geary was on the screensavers. Geary Srinivasam, who is the one of the founders and the CEO, and brought a Helm and set it up. And I was so impressed, I bought one. They're not cheap. They're $500, and you have to pay $100 a year after the first year for the service. But I've tried to set up email servers before, and it's hard to do. This works pretty well. I was very impressed. It's interesting. If you want, so the idea is, instead of storing your mail on somebody else's server, you store it on a server at home. There are all sorts of problems with doing that. For instance, your IP address, almost all residential IP addresses are blocked, not only by your ISP, who doesn't want you sending spam, but most recipients won't accept it because they say, you know, chances are that's a spam reflector. That's not going to be real email. So they solve that by you route your mail from your server to their server through a VPN. They use Amazon Web Services, and they use IP blocks that are clear. They also turn on all of the, you know, reverse DNS, all the other DKIM. I can't remember all the different forms for email authentication, DMARC, that mean that the recipients are likely to not assume that you're spam. And in fact, I've had no problem sending mail out through it. I decided to get a fresh domain for it, which I'm not going to tell anybody, but I will tell you guys off the air, because it's a way that it's like going to be now the personal family server. If you want to get through to me, because Leoville.com is completely swamped. I tried it at first at Leoville.com, and it was just like a mess. So, but this worked pretty well. So anyway, I know you mentioned this before, Stacey. Having used it now, I think I could recommend it. It's not, you know, one thing, and they don't mention this, I think they need to. You have to have a smartphone to use it. But this is brilliant, but they should really tell people ahead of time. Each user has to have a smartphone. The reason is, this is your security token, because you can't configure it unless you're in proximity. It uses Bluetooth LE, so you have to be near it, and then you get the credentials for it, but you have to do it through an app on a smartphone. So,
that's no bueno.
Well, it's more secure, but it's like for a business, if you set this up for business, every employee has to go stand next to the server or to set up his account. So that's a little weird, right? But I think for a home server, it'd be fine.
Well, not every, I mean, certain, some my daughter still doesn't have a phone.
Right. So, and I guess if you had a spare phone, you could set it up for her. But each phone,
that actually gets to, go on.
Well, each phone is, it's like a token. This becomes your security token, basically.
So this isn't related to the news, but it's totally related to Google. And I'm going to throw this out here, because I, in the middle of December, we switched from being in Madam A, so an Amazon Alexa household, to being a Google household.
You just said the name.
I know.
Say Echo.
I'm sorry. Echo. Amazon
she
Echo.
She says Madam A, and then she says the A word.
I know. I'm very tired. I didn't have coffee.
No, I'm sorry. I'm just teasing you. So, go ahead.
We started this, and I'm going to do a post after about a month in, but we're encountering all kinds of issues. And the biggest issue we have is I had turned on personalization. And I've complained before because Google doesn't always recognize my voice. So that's one part. But my husband trained his voice. I quote unquote trained mine better. So it gets me about 50% of the time. But I don't know what to do with my daughter. And it is a pain in the butt to set up the personalization. And she has to have an app to do the voice training on her phone.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm very curious if
does
people
she not have
in the
an
chat
iPad
room,
or anything like a
she has an so she has an iPhone that she uses, and she has a Gmail address that's personal to her.
Okay.
And then she has her Google stuff for school, which is not linked out to any of the Google ecosystem.
Right.
So but yeah, it's really tough
we're getting into a world where you have to have one of these now.
And well, you shouldn't have to have.
No, I agree. It's problematic.
That, or if you just have that, then that's fine. But like, then I shouldn't have to do like an email account. Like with Amazon, I have to do an email account.
Right.
So,
well, that's one of the things I'm going to use the Helm for. Is I'm creating
an email for your house.
Well, yes, basically. So I don't want to say the domain, but I have a domain name. Let's say it's myemail.com. And then you can have anything that goes to myemail.com. So I'm creating weird account names for everything that are non-guessable. That gives me some security, but also that I can trace. So I know. So that's what I would do with the Echo, for instance, is I would set it up with one of these special names that only it has. Do you see what I'm saying? So it
so
could
this
be.
Is, this is why you find out who's screwing you over with your privacy?
Yeah, you see who it's selling it to. Plus, it kind of keeps it isolated from your main email, right? You just filter it all. Because anything that comes to Amazon Echo at myemail.com, that came from signing up for an Echo account. And so I can filter that out. Ooh. I think there's an advantage to that. You can do that with Gmail if you want to, using pluses. Although right. I know I think people are wise to that now, right? They don't let you do the plus as much as they used to.
So Scooter X sent me a thing all about this, and I realized that the app she wants to use isn't for families, and that's why I'm encountering some challenges.
Google so she Home can't and turn your on child's her. Google account.
Yeah, she can't turn on our television right now.
Because she's under 13.
Yes.
Well, that's as it should be.
I think well,
that's,
no, she's,
that's
I mean,
intentional.
Like,
that's not a bug. That's a feature.
That's a flaw. Well, and also things like a babysitter right now. Like maybe can I turn off voice? Maybe I can turn off voice like recognition for certain things.
Your
like,
babysitter does not need access to Madame A.
Oh, no, that's how you turn on our because it's actually a big selling point for us and why we have the Harmony.
You can't turn on the TV without Madame A?
No, you can, but you have to follow, you know, we've got like a receiver this.
Yeah.
So like this way you just... It's all done for you. You just tell her to turn it on and it's always worked.
Yeah.
But now with Google, it's like, I'm afraid I can't do that for you.
Oh, because it doesn't recognize her voice.
Yes.
So you need a guest account or something.
Yeah.
They need to make a guest account.
Well, no, it's not a guest account. It would be they need to make it so certain functionalities I don't need to have voice recognition for. Because a guest account won't help you if it's voice recognition based.
What this show really is about is real world meeting digital world and the problems that entails. Honestly, that is what this show's been about. And more it's about what it's about is how there's this impedance mismatch between humans and technology. So I was going to tell you some good things. For instance, the copyright law did not get renewed. So as of yesterday, anything created in 1923 or sooner is in public domain.
Or earlier, you mean?
Yeah, earlier, not whatever not, sooner not means
sooner,
to you.
Which would be more recently.
Thank you for correcting me. I don't even know
what that means.
I don't think sooner even means anything in that context. But
or prior.
Prior, that's the word. Thank you. And Mickey Mouse in 2024. Remember that it was Disney.
Disney going to,
Yeah, you think Disney will get involved?
No, yeah.
The Sonny Bono Copyright Extension Act. That's what happened in 1999.
It'll next be the Stormy Daniels extension act or something.
Yeah, Stormy should run for Congress. I'd vote for her.
Yeah.
So the whole point is every time Mickey Mouse's copyright protection has come close to lapsing, because he was Steamboat Willie was in 1924, Congress voted to extend copyright the last time in 99 for 20 years, and that's why now it's, but they didn't do it this year because they're so disorganized, they just forgot.
But they could do it still.
They could still do it, but maybe they'll continue to forget. Rhapsody,
or, you know, we don't have a government right now, so.
Yeah,
right.
And this is a good thing because I will submit it's a good thing for things to become public domain. Like, for instance, I don't know, Grimm's Fairy Tales, because then some guy named Walt could come along and create movies based on Grimm's Fairy Tales, but no one can create a movie based on Cinderella because it's still in copyright. And so the bringing things into the public sphere, this is what Larry Lessig always talked about, and one of the reasons he created Creative Commons, bringing things into this public sphere is good. It's reasonable to say there should be some protection for the creator for some reasonable period of time. It seems like, what is it, 100 years almost should be enough. I think that's probably a little longer than intended. Rhapsody in Blue will go in the public domain next year. Great Gatsby in 2021. The Sun Also Rises 2022. But the big one is January 1st, 2024, when both Batman, Superman, Snow White. No, that's later. Mickey Mouse will come into. This is all from an article in
Ars
Technical. None of this is going to happen.
That's not happening.
This is all dream on, isn't it?
No, Disney has 100 lawyers and 3,000 lobbyists right now working on this.
Yeah. The problem is Sonny Bono's passed. But they, as you say, Stormy Daniels Copyright Extension Act of 2024. Just a matter of. That's Jeff's name for it. It was Sonny Bono's law. Sonny Bono did it.
I got that.
Well, we got to find a new celebrity congressperson. You want the Michael Avenatti Copyright Protection Act of 2023? You can have it. That's fine. I had other good things. Oh, hospitals are now going to have to post their prices online.
God, thank God. Oh, my gosh. We are living in fear for my daughter's ER room visit.
Oh. It's covered, right? Did you get an ambulance?
No. We took her in.
I know people who actively eschew ambulances because, if you've ever gotten an ambulance bill, you'll know why.
I have people, when I faint, I tell people never to call an ambulance. Unfortunately, a lot of times I'm unconscious. So then I get
You need a
screwed.
Sign. You could just say, please don't call an ambulance.
I need a bracelet.
Or bracelet, yeah.
Yeah.
On January 1st, yesterday, a new regulation took effect requiring hospitals to post the prices of their services online. This is a provision called, Health and Human Services, Inpatient Prospective Payment System Rule. They have to share the prices of standard services online as well as make medical records more easily accessible by patients themselves and shareable between medical practices. Why should these be online? Well, because you don't know. You don't know.
So one of my graduates from entrepreneurial journalism named Jeannie Pinder has been working on a business on this for years called clearhealthcosts.com.
Good.
Where she works to any way she can through patients, through insurance companies, whoever, to get the cost to be made more transparent. And not just hospitals, but also doctors' procedures. Huge. Because they can vary all over the map.
Huge. Here's some more good news. If the government shutdown continues, which it probably will, although we'll find out, right, tomorrow. Because when is Congress sit? Tomorrow, right? The 3rd.
Tomorrow, yeah.
So maybe they'll do something about it. I don't know. But if they don't, the FCC will shut down. That can only be good, right? Because more government is bad government. Isn't that what they say? Let's shut the FCC down. The FCC's suspended activities will include consumer complaint and inquiry phone lines, consumer protection and local competition enforcement, licensing services, including broadcast, wireless, wireline, management
use
of radio
bad
spectrum.
Words. If you're on TV,
you can
use
start
a bad
swearing,
word.
Kids. For competitive technology. Wouldn't that be funny if the thing that ends the government shutdown is Howard Stern swearing on broadcast. That would be great. That would make me happy. Athletes do not own their own tattoos.
That was fascinating.
It makes perfect sense, but yeah, problem.
So it's okay for, you know, LeBron's tats to appear on TV during a game, incidentally. But
because there's a presumed license.
Yeah. But should that tattoo be duplicated in, let's say, a video game? Now we got a problem because the design belongs to the tattoo artist. A copyright lawyer who, by the way, represented the guy who did Mike Tyson's face tattoo and successfully, I think, defended it in court, right? That's exactly what it looks like. Mm-hmm. So I could get sued next as well. I'm putting my hand on my face. His name is Michael Kahn. He says, video games, probably says it like this, video games are entirely new area. There's a LeBron James, but it's not LeBron James. It's a cartoon version of him.
I'm hoping the guy actually went to Cambridge.
Michael Kahn, Michael Cohen, is there a difference? I don't think so. Lionel Messi's heart-eating gorilla. Oh, no, that's Conor McGregor has a heart-eating gorilla. Lionel Messi has that sleeve right there. EA, you got some splaining to do. They're facing a copyright infringement lawsuit after the cover of the game NFL Street, included an illustration of running back Ricky Williams and some of his tats. But the artist withdrew his claim in 2013.
Well, this is the interesting part. This is where it is to solve this problem. They're saying when you get a tattoo, if you are a famous player or something, you should get a license to have that become part of your digital likeness, which I think is really fascinating. And honestly, I think as a normal person, I might be like, hey, if I were going to get a tattoo in a highly visible spot, I might do that too. Case I want to create an accurate digital avatar.
Exactly. So think about that, kids, when you're getting that face tattoo, make sure you have the artist sign over the rights. That's what Mike Evans did. He's a NFL receiver. Gotti Flores, who they call the Teflon tattoo artist, has spent at least 40 hours tattooing Evans. He had to give permission for his work to be reproduced in the game. Really, it didn't even matter to me, said Mr. Flores, who signed a waiver for no compensation. It was dope to have my tattoos on there.
Well, you say it, Mr. Flores. You're absolutely right.
It was dope.
An honor.
It was dope.
It was dope.
But there have been other lawsuits.
I mean, I get it. I also think, you know, I'm thinking about back in 2003 when I got married, I arranged to have for my wedding photographer, I actually bought the digital rights as part of my photography package. And she's like, no one has ever asked for this before.
Wow.
And she very much undercharged me. So it was nice.
Wow. That's smart.
Futurist.
I hope you put them up under Creative Commons so we can remix them.
Yeah.
No.
Did you get permission to use the Eyes of Texas or upon
you? Like them.
You know what? I think in that situation, I don't know. I've been working on the railroads in public domain, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And it was just the music, not the singing.
No one sang it. So when in doubt.
It wasn't the Eyes of Texas or upon you. It was I've been working on the railroad. This is a callback to an earlier episode. I invite you all to listen. A federal judge in Oregon says the state law that defines what an engineer is violates free speech.
Was this a software engineer issue?
No. It's an interesting story.
It's really interesting story.
Yeah. A Beaverton guy, Mats Jarlstrom, didn't like how short the yellow lights were in his town. He said,
was it in Portland?
I think it was in Beaverton.
Beaverton. Okay.
He had he had got a ticket for running. Actually, his wife got a ticket for running a red light in 2013. So Jarlstrom, who is, by the way, has a bachelor's of science, a BS in engineering from Sweden, spent 3 years analyzing the method for calculating the duration of a yellow light and found the formula failed to account for drivers who have to slow down to make a legal right turn or left turn, a legal turn. They have to slow down. They're making a turn. Did not account for the fact that they are in the box during the yellow. It turns to red because they've slowed down to make a turn. He sent his traffic light calculations to the state board and identified himself as an engineer to not only local media, but 60 Minutes, who did a story on him. The state fined him $500 for violating a law that governs who can call themselves an engineer, finding that he wasn't registered in Oregon as a professional engineer. He's not an engineer. He doesn't have the hat or anything. But maybe the state should have thought a little bit. This is a guy who spent 3 years analyzing traffic light data to get his wife out of a ticket.
If there's no better definition of an engineer, I can't imagine it.
Well, and or someone who is likely to challenge that $500 fine. He did. He went all the way up to a federal appeals court and won a 25-page written ruling saying Jarlstrom may study and communicate publicly or privately about his theories relating to traffic lights as long as his remarks occur outside the context of any employment or contractual relationship with a governmental or other group that regulates traffic light timing. He may, in fact, describe himself both publicly and privately as an engineer.
So there is a, I guess if you were not an engineer and you told the media that you were an engineer, do you, like, is that fair? Like, if I called myself a doctor, I'd be committing fraud, right? If I'm not actually a doctor.
He studied engineering. He does the acts of engineering. And
okay, yeah.
And yes, so, there is licensing for engineers to some extent, but not the way there is for a doctor.
And they did say you can't pose as an engineer. You can't come to the state and say, I'm going to design a bridge for you. But you could, if you wish, send traffic light calculations to the state board and talk to 60 Minutes and say, okay, I'm an engineer.
And we had that for a while in Texas where you could not, anyone who did software, you could not call someone a software engineer because of licensing requirements.
Wow.
So that actually was a big deal here for a while. Yeah,
You definitely wouldn't want a programmer to design a bridge.
Well, yeah, but you wouldn't want a mechanical engineer to design a bridge
either. Right. Or yeah, right. So yes.
But mechanical engineers were okay.
Bridge beta.
Right.
Bridge 2.0. Well, there is if your first one falls down.
Yeah.
So I think that's a victory for
free speech and engineers everywhere.
Engineers everywhere.
Are we doing a change log?
I can now wear the hat.
Oh Lord.
No, there's not really. I mean, we could, but there's very little change to talk about.
Well, I found one, I think.
Google. Google.
Oh, no. Oh, no. He can't stop himself.
He pushed the button. Well, Google had this article on kickstarting your New Year's resolutions with Google Fit. But it's not really anything.
They see you made it.
That's the change log.
That was it. All right.
That's the change log. It's over.
Well done, Carsten. Well played. Well played, sir.
This is a very provocative article. We probably should have led with this in the New York Times today about a move from the Commerce Department. They're considering security restrictions on the export of artificial intelligence technologies. They don't want the Chinese to get a hold of our research, I guess. But according to the Times, Cade Metz writing in San Francisco, a growing number of Silicon Valley insiders are worried that proposed export restrictions could actually short-circuit the preeminence of American companies in the next big thing to hit their industry, artificial intelligence. So this is actually under discussion right now. There's only a few days left to comment on this.
I just don't understand how they could do it. I mean, do you regulate the algorithms?
Well, they tried to do this with strong encryption, you remember, calling it munitions. The Commerce Department is has a January 10th deadline for public comment on AI export rules.
I guess I could go read the comments.
And what Silicon Valley's worried about is exactly what you just said, which is you can't do anything about it anyway. They're not going to make these rules aren't making a difference, and they could harm companies in the U.S., help international competitors, and stifle technology improvements.
So that's why we need to know the how, because I mean theoretically. I mean, that's what everyone says when they're faced with these things. So I just automatically throw that out. I'm just like, but how would you do it? Because that would have the impact of, that would determine the impact.
Right. Well, yeah. For instance, if you say, well, no American AI scientists can give papers outside the United States.
But or you couldn't publish them?
Yeah.
I mean,
how do you contain it? Yeah. I mean, it's, well, hello.
That's, this comes from, in August, Congress passed the Export Controls Act of 2018. Which added export restrictions to emerging and foundational technologies.
So basically you can give it away, you can't sell it?
Well, we don't know. That's right, because we got to find out what these rules will be. We're still in the comment period.
Well, and do you do things like, oh, you can't manufacture GPUs over there? Because that's how we train a lot of stuff. I mean, do you not have data sets that are available? I mean, there's different... Yeah. A lot of AI innovation is actually being done and made in public. The things that are private today is access to the underlying technology, which is highly commodified. So that's not a place to do it. The only other way to do it is access to the data sets. But the data sets just, that's not the innovative part. That's like access to steel so you can build a cool building when you're really trying to stop some style of architecture from escaping.
Right. Federal regulations exempt publicly available information from export control. That means the government is unlikely to bar companies and universities from publishing fundamental AI research.
But that would be a violation of First Amendment.
But, yeah, well, I don't know. But it could establish controls that restrict foreign access to that information.
How?
I don't know.
How?
I don't know. It might, one thing
Gutenberg
that might do
brought us national boundaries. The internet takes them away,
right?
And that's why we have nationalists going crazy, because their fundamental view of themselves is challenged, and that's why you know who is trying to build a wall
right.
in a last futile attempt to hold on to a border.
It's a nostalgia for an
it is
something that never really existed, but. That's what Harari talks about in his 21 lessons, is that nationalism doesn't have an answer for global problems like climate change and AI and all of this stuff, because it's nationalistic. This doesn't apply to a global world, you know, like the internet.
Yeah.
Overly restrictive rules that prevent, here's one way they would do it, prevent foreign nationals from working on certain technologies in the United States. Could push those researchers and companies into other countries.
Mm-hmm.
It might be easier for people to just do this stuff in Europe, and which means they wouldn't do it in the U.S.
Where they'd also have to worry about GDPR and be compliant there and have better right. business as a result.
Move to China. If you want to do AI research, move to China. Anything goes.
Well.
Speaking of which, the Chinese takeover of the Indian app ecosystem. Almost half of the apps currently in use in India, popular in India, are from China. 2018.
So I've been waiting for China to come to the U.S.?
2018 is likely to be remembered as the year when the Chinese took over Indian smartphones. They're doing it in America, too, because who owns TikTok? TikTok is owned by a Chinese company.
It is, yes.
In December 2017, the top 10 mobile apps on Google Play Store in India, 5 out of the top 10 are Chinese. There were 18 Chinese apps among the top 100 across various categories. UC Browser, ShareIt, NewsDog. Oh, that was last year. This year, 44 out of the top 100. Almost half. This is what's changed. Yeah.
So that's India, of course. But this is another example of, and I've kind of come to understand this a little bit better too, thanks to some people who've written us. Thank you, and to some books, including Harari's book. China is very much interested in controlling what's going on inside of China with its own citizens, but is very global in its outlook.
Oh yeah. Well, yes and no. I mean, you'd think that the major Chinese apps and companies, Alibaba and such, would be here. It's kind of like, why bother? They have so much growth left in China.
Right, right.
And
they don't need us
problems
yet.
Here, but I keep on waiting for that moment.
But India is a big economy. So it makes sense that they approach India. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
All these American companies that want to go to China, I kept on saying, go to India first. Interesting.
Well,
on TikTok.com, and there's no mention of China.
Huh.
None.
None, but it is owned by a Chinese company. It's among the top apps in the U.S. as well, is it not? I think it is.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, your teenager would be, or she's not a teenager yet. I guess that's the problem. Top apps on Google Play Store in U.S. I'm sure TikTok's in the top 10.
Have you used TikTok?
I used it briefly. It's really not for me.
You old fart, you.
Because really, you're old.
It's number two in in the U.S. Number one is Color Bump 3D. I
don't Never know. Heard of Color Bump. Never heard
that
of Color
can't Bump. Be right. These are probably, you know, as of last week or something. But, yeah, TikTok's number two. And the company's called Musical.ly. And, you know, it was originally an American product that was bought by a Chinese company.
Which one? Musical.ly or TikTok? Musical.ly was American, right?
Yeah, TikTok and Musical.ly. Yeah.
Are they separate?
No,
they're the same now.
Oh, they are.
TikTok bought Musical.ly.
Right.
Okay. Or I didn't know. I thought they left it independent.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, no. They merged it. They killed Musical.ly and they merged it.
Oh, you guys, the road near my house just got closed down because of falling rock. I just had to tell you that.
Did you just get a text?
I did.
Yeah.
I just got a notification.
I signed up for those when we had the fires last year. They call them Nixels here. And I get them all the time now. There's police action all over the place.
You have a mountain near you, Stacey? You have people going after Waymo cars? How do you get rocks?
Limestone. We have limestone cliff areas that we tunneled through for our roadways. And so...
Oh. Limestone, yeah. You know, nature. If you have limestone anywhere in the world, pretty much, you've got holes in the ground.
Yeah, well, Central Texas is on a giant karst system. Yeah.
Right. It's famous, Texas karst. That's what Karsten was named after, I think. Weren't you named after the Texas karst?
No.
This is our last story, but this will make you feel good. A cafe has opened in Japan. It's staffed by robots, but the robots themselves are controlled by paralyzed people. It's a startup that specializes in robots for disabled people. The Orihime D is a 120-centimeter, 4-foot-tall robot that can be operated remotely from a paralyzed person's home. Even if the operator only has control of their eyes, they can command the robot to move, look around, speak with people, and handle objects. They get paid $8 an hour to do it. But, of course, there's a bigger benefit because they're out there working.
That's really interesting.
A staff of 10 people with conditions like ALS or spinal cord injuries are working from home. They're paid 1,000 yen an hour. That's the standard wage for part-time work in Japan to serve up coffee and interact with the clientele as robots. It was crowdfunded. They raised $26,000 to do it. It will not stay open after a few months, unfortunately. But I think what an interesting and I think great idea. So these are not robots taking jobs, but giving jobs. Isn't that cool?
Yes.
Really neat story from Sora News 24. Their headline is bringing you yesterday's news from Japan and Asia today, which is not okay. Admittedly, the best slogan. It's maybe a little better than democracy dies in darkness, but it's, you know,
the yesterday's news today from Japan and Asia. That concludes our list of stories for the day. Oh, I should say one more thing I'm very excited about. So earlier last year, I mentioned that we hadn't gotten our What Three Words banner. And I got a nice email from Giles at What Three Words saying, what? You didn't get your banner? So, ladies and gentlemen, I can now unveil without further ado the What Three Words address of the Twit Eastside Studios Glow Walnut Nasal.
Wow.
Glow Walnut Nasal. We're going to put this up. Where should we put it up? Outside the door? Right where you put the numbers, right? The street numbers.
Yeah.
Glow Walnut Nasal. If you ever need to get to our studio, just remember a glowing walnut in Leo's nose.
Can I just say, you know, oh, hey, G, where is, or take me to Glow Walnut Nasal?
I think you can in some jurisdictions.
So I just searched on Glow Walnut Nasal. Besides you talking about this, the next is Nuts About Walnut,
yeah,
a Wood magazine, and then Plastic Surgery in Danville.
Oh.
If you need to get the glowing walnut.
If you need to get removed.
Nose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is
this
what
confused Google considerably.
What three, the number three, whatthreewords.com. And if you go to their map, which isn't very complete, but if you go to their map, you'll see Glow Walnut Nasal leads you right to our front door. Yeah. And then I think there's a way to like then send those coordinates to Google. Like, yeah, like navigate to location on Google Maps,
cool, you can
that
pick,
kind of
pick
thing.
Your app.
You pick your app,
cool.
Yeah. So it tells you what it is, how to get to Glow Walnut Nasal. It's 1 minute, 13 feet away. I don't know, it's going to take me less than a minute, I think. But
maybe cool? There's some traffic somewhere outside the studio.
It's, yeah, heavy traffic in the hall outside.
Exactly.
So thank you, Giles. I got it. He said we sent it to you. I have it here, but maybe it got lost. Maybe the postman stole it because he doesn't want to be put out of a job.
I think it's probably.
Well, I still demand credit for being the first to mention What Three
you
Words.
You did many years ago.
The network, yes. Long ago, very.
And then
long.
I rediscovered it, having forgotten completely.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
And of course, I, egotist that I am, made sure to point out.
I'm just thrilled. They give this to you for free.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, anybody can get this if you go to what3words.com.
So I have a problem on Google Maps is that it thinks my house is about, it doesn't know where the street goes.
Exactly why you need this.
But it doesn't, it stops back there.
See, the thing about What3Words is it's not based on street addresses, anything as primitive as that. They've divided the entire world up into 3 meter squares. Everywhere in the world, and every 3 meter square has its own unique 3-word description, which I think is great. So, yeah, I don't know if they still offer the free placard, but I'm thrilled to have mine.
And, yay!
Yeah, I like this. We should, yeah, let's put it next to our number or something, or just put it on the door. I don't know, Glow Walnut Nasal. All right, Stacy, do you have a pick this week?
I don't. I had a great one for the week before, but I did not. I'm sorry, you guys. The holidays.
That's okay.
Everything.
Did all of your
queso happens?
Automated stuff work in your house, like the Christmas, and did all of that happen? The blinds go dancing, and
the blinds did go dancing. Everything happened. As I'm taking stuff down, I'm also taking other stuff out for the getting ready for the house to sell. So,
oh no,
I'm dismantling.
This is serious. You mean it?
Oh,
she's dismantling her IoT creation.
Yeah, it's gonna be, and I'm gonna put in some other stuff anyway.
So, are you taking the reformer with you?
Yeah, the reformer's going with me.
That's I've moved my reformer several times now.
Yeah, it won't be here when we're showing the house.
Hell.
I love my reformer. Well, how about you, Jeff? Do you have a number?
I have a few.
Oh, good.
For Stacey.
Thanks, Jeff.
I'm going to make
up. I am.
Okay.
One, the business one. Google has evidently, says this report, profited $3 billion on Made by Google stuff. Everybody made fun when they had their laptops and their stuff.
That's a significant amount of money. $3 billion. Wow.
From their hardware. As their hardware gains traction. So I thought that was actually newsworthy.
This is actually an investor predicting that they'll make $3 billion this year from their hardware.
Yeah, but the fact that they could even be close to that number would surprise the heck out of me.
Yeah, I mean, their revenues are actually pretty good.
It's pretty hard to separate them out. But, yeah, they're selling a lot of Chromecasts. They're selling a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So the fun one, since we're on a podcast world, is that in the last 2 weeks, BBC made, I hope you didn't have this already, 16,000 sound effects available for free. Karsten, what? Go mad.
Oh, I want them.
So I did two searches here, one for screams and one for doors. So you can pick a few. There's one that I think in the screams at the bottom of that page is orgies.
How about one woman, fairly short screams?
That's a good one, yes.
Okay, that's enough. How about teenage girls screaming in a theater? They're a little slow. What is a burlesque scream?
I don't know. We'll find out.
Let's find out. Oh, it's like a.
Yeah. Most of these are marked comedy, by the way, just to be clear here. These are not. I got all set.
That sounds like Stacey.
On like the second. On the second or third page, it had beheadings. I thought, oh my God, they didn't do that, but they were comedy beheadings.
Wait a minute. This says standard orgy as opposed to, I don't know. What's the whip for?
60s. How is that? 60s.
That's totally average.
I think maybe orgy means something different in the UK.
I think it does in the UK.
I think it means like it's probably a technical term used by the BBC to indicate like a riotous, raucous calamity.
There's a lot of funny door ones. There's machines of all kinds. If you search for things, you search for Linotype, you can hear a Linotype. Oh, ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk awesome. Away.
These were, I presume, used, you know, by BBC Radio Theater and others.
Kinds of things, yeah.
Wow. You know, I see. See, I take screams out, right? Unmodulated groove on a blank record. See, how many times have you needed this? I think Moby used that in one of his recordings. Anti-aircraft batteries, Aquaria, Army, braiding machines. Here's what a braiding machine sounds like. What the hell is a braiding machine?
No idea.
No idea. Here's some fishing industry sounds. Wow, this is great. It's as in beta.
There's one, fizzy liquids was below fishing.
This is why we pay for our television licenses here in the UK.
Wait, you don't live in the UK.
Oh, never mind. Oh, this is radio heaven.
Yeah, so Karsten, I think that when we do certain things, you've got to have sound effects all ready for us. You can mock us in all kinds of audible ways.
Let's find something for Techno Panic. Let's have every time someone says Techno Panic, we need
the screams page.
Yeah.
Ah! No.
Here, let's. Techno Panic struck earlier today. I don't know. Wow, this is
it's a lot amazing, of.
This is great. So. This reminds me of the fact that I've been watching Homecoming on, is it Amazon Prime? I think it is.
It is Amazon Prime. I watched that.
It's based on a podcast from Gimlet.
Oh, hey, you know what? Here's a suggestion, although it's old, so it's probably not applicable for most people. We're listening to the unexplained disappearance of Mars Patel with my daughter and I, and that is wonderful for kids.
Is that a cereal?
It's like cereal for kids.
Cereal for kids.
It's and they use like kids' voices and it's very fun. Oh, and if you have a child,
and where is that?
On all your iTunes,
it's a free podcast.
It's a podcast. Yeah, nice. It's just a straight up podcast.
Should I start doing some fiction podcasts?
I feel like already.
I always wanted to, but I thought I need good scripts.
And yes, you would have to write them.
They're hard to come by. Yeah.
I start not this Friday, but next Friday. I am volunteering to teach a podcasting class for my daughter's school. And that's we're either awesome. Going to do a story-based one that they write, that's or awesome. We're going to do a news one.
That's really
that's good. Very cool.
Yeah.
So,
actually, speaking of podcasts, and you might incorporate this into your curriculum. This is a new site called ListenNotes.com, written by one guy in San Francisco, scratching his own itch. It's a podcast search engine. So if I enter Jeff Jarvis in here, it will come up with your appearances on The Good Fight, This Week in Google 488, our last episode, Avoiding Airway Disasters with Dr. Jeff Jarvis.
That's the other Jeff Jarvis. That's the one who actually has talent and is needed in the world.
Here's a German one that you did, OMR Media, Mit PFI. So isn't this cool? And then a bunch of twigs. So you can search for any subject. Let's search for, I don't know, Waymo. And they searched through many, many, many podcasts.
Huh.
To find the words. It's Google for podcasts. And it's really very cool. I wanted to give him a credit for creating
who
this.
Who is he?
It says here somewhere.
Name on the site?
Yeah. I found it somewhere. Here it is. About...
Sorry, I asked.
Wenbin Fong, he lives in San Francisco. I quit my day job from next door 748 days and 23 hours ago. Obviously a programming nerd. He says, I'm an avid podcast listener. I listen to 5+ hours every day. I used to subscribe to only a few, but I still couldn't listen to all episodes. So he created this. I can build this in a weekend-ish project, but it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And so I think this is really cool. He has a form for submitting a missing podcast.
I love new means of discovery. It's great.
Yeah.
Let me mention something else while we're here. So it's German. SteadyHQ.com. I needed, when I wrote this piece about the German journalism stuff, I wanted to read this one guy, and there was a paywall. I thought, oh, hell. And this is an amazing site that has pages and pages and pages of 7 pages filled with sites. They're all German, but membership sites. And so it makes some sense. Yeah, we're not going to pay for all of them, but it's an easy way to throw some money at someplace and join as opposed to a paywall. So I wish we had something like this in the U.S. that was an aggregator of membership opportunities.
So you pay once and you get all this
content. You sign up once and then you can choose to easily say, okay, I want to join that one or that one.
Steady.
Steady HQ. If you go to Explore on the top.
What we're learning in the video world is that there is re-aggregation happening because Roku's just announced that it's going to do as Google already does with YouTube TV. And others do give you a chance to subscribe to Showtime or HBO within the Roku ecosystem, so you get one bill. And I think that's what users want. And I bet you something like that will happen with paywalls because nobody wants to get nickel and dimed to death, or maybe they do.
Isn't that like what Texture is?
Yeah, of course. Apple has bought Texture, and
yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen to it. I think it's going to be incorporated into an Apple News product. That's the rumor, but we don't know yet. There's some problem because, you know, remember Texture was created by magazines like Hearst and Condé Nast as a way to sell magazines in digital environment, but all those deals occurred because they were owned by themselves. Now that they're owned by Apple, I think all those deals are off the table and Apple has to renegotiate. And it's, I think, having a sticky time renegotiate. I'm not sure, but with all
and magazines are in trouble. There was a story somewhere today. I forget where I saw it that women's magazines are particularly in trouble, which is interesting. Stacey, did you ever?
I had 17 when I was 13.
Right. When you were 13, right. Yeah.
I pick up a Vogue every now and then just to look at the fashion spreads, but I don't subscribe to any women's magazine. Too.
You were never a glamour reader or any of that.
I like Cosmo.
Not really, no. I mean, no, I don't read a lot of... I only read really highfalutin nerdy magazines. I don't know what... No, I was I read Scientific American. I read The New Yorker, The Economist. I'm like, God, I am a pretentious person.
I thought you were a Family Circle type.
I read websites for my silly women's comment, like my fun kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think this is why they're in trouble, because I look at almost everybody I know. People don't subscribe to Dead Trees anymore. They just read.
I used to buy them by the pound. They had to double bag me at the Hudson News.
Yeah,
because I just don't buy them anymore.
Well, that's good. Well, the Hudson News is gone too.
I subscribe to 4 magazines. They just are really expensive.
A funny quote thing happened with The Atlantic. I have a digital subscription to The Atlantic, and I got a paper copy of it last month. And then I just got an email from them saying, due to an error, we sent all our digital subscribers paper copies. But if you would like to continue your paper subscription for free, go check here. So I said, well, yeah, if it's free. What's that all about, Jeff? You know about how this business
works. Well, this is now owned by The Atlantic.
You got that too?
I got it from Wired.
Oh, Condé.
It's a new trick.
It's a new trick.
Is it to goose subscriber numbers?
Yes.
Okay.
That's readership numbers for the ads, because you make more money on the print ads. And so I've told the story on the show before. My late father-in-law, who died many years ago, we still get magazines because they think that it's going to go into his waiting room.
Oh.
And we get different magazines every month sent to us because of that reason. So they want to boost the readership numbers on the magazine.
I used to get those too, even though I didn't have a waiting room.
But because you were a business.
Yes. They thought I'd put them in the lobby.
Right.
Oh, that's really interesting. And that's probably where they get the pass-along numbers.
That's exactly what they pass along.
Right, yes.
800 people read this because it was in Leo's lobby.
So some weeks we'll get like 3 copies of Dogs and Guns because they need more circulation this month. Next month, we get Sports Illustrated. Next month, we get something else.
But Atlantic isn't owned by Condé Nast, is it?
Atlantic is now owned by Lorene Powell Jobs and the Emerson Collective.
Oh, the Emerson Collective. Oh.
Yes, and so she's doing amazing and wonderful things around journalism and media.
Good for her.
And one of them was buying the Atlantic, Lock, Stock, and Barrel. So it's so just as the Washington Post has its Bezos, Atlantic has its Powell Jobs, Time has its Benioff. Some of these folks are now going into the magazine world to try to save them.
Do you worry that this is a little bit like the patronage system of old Venice?
Well, no. I mean, the New York Times has been.
They make money, though, don't they?
Yeah, the family has control, but the family owns really a relatively small portion.
Yeah, family zoning, I mean like the Hearst Corporation, but I'm talking about patronage, where you buy something and run it. You don't expect to make any money on it just because you want to support good journalism.
I think that... Go ahead, Stacey.
I was going to say, I think Benioff wants to make money on this, right?
It was a personal with Mark and his wife. I wanted to get him to the journalism school to talk about that, and he wasn't available to do that. I'm really curious because I don't know what I would do with Time Magazine. I had no idea. I used to work in the company. I don't know what I would do with it.
Nobody's going to get their news from a news weekly.
Not a general interest magazine. General interest is what's dead.
How about The Week, which is a kind of compilation news?
I think that works because it's the value of aggregation. Yes.
Right.
And the guy who launched The Week in the U.S. then worked with the last owner to save The Atlantic and really made it work, and then now is at Bloomberg Media.
Oh, interesting.
To answer your question about patronage, Leo, I think that what we're seeing is Gutenberg time, watch out. But I think we're seeing a return to earlier business models as we try out things. And so patronage is a temporary solution to a problem as we try to understand where the value really is and rethink our models. There's a lot of people declaring advertising dead. I certainly hope not, and you certainly hope not. I don't think it is. I don't think paywalls are going to solve everything, but I think patronage is a way to, it was a model of the very early days of publication of books, and it's coming back for a time.
This is a conversation Lisa and I have been having because we looked at Gimlet. Gimlet did three things. They have ads, but they also got raised at least $20 million in venture capital, and they ask for money from their listeners. And I've always felt like you pick one. You can't do all three, but I guess you can.
Yeah, you can. So what do you guys conclude?
Lisa says, well, why don't we ask, why don't we create a club or something?
I think so.
Some value added thing that we could then say, hey, you know, support Twit.
That's how I discovered you way back when, Leo Laporte.
That's how we started, but we never raised enough money.
Because Jake Jarvis wanted to give you money. And I said, who's this Leo Laporte guy you want to give money to?
Oh, so it worked out.
It did.
I got something better than money. I got you.
Young Jake joined. Well, you didn't know anything about that. He came out and, who's this Google guy? We're doing a Google show. But yeah, that's how I knew you before you
Well, that's what we originally thought we would do, but we never made enough money to support more than one show. And but advertising has been very good for us. You think it's going to go away?
I think that your advertising is the last that's going to go away because you have the added value of the relationship to the public and the trust and all that. But advertisers are constantly under a lot of pressure.
Yeah. Well, I'm figuring I'll just retire at that point.
But your son
if I were 30, I would be very worried.
Doesn't your son want the business?
Yeah, he does. Worried? Yeah. But he's going to have to, if he does, he's going to have to solve it, right? He's going to have to figure it out.
And the membership and patronage.
Yeah.
The technical ecosystem will be so different. So,
well, Patreon didn't exist when I was asking Jeff's son for money. Patreon would have made that a lot easier, although I don't know. I mean, I just don't know. I don't know.
I just read something. I'm doing my Gutenberg research, and I just read a piece. Oh God, is it in this pile or that pile? I don't know where it is. But on books and arguing that, there's a major system of patronage now around books. There's a major system of self-publishing around books. That books don't die, but the business model of books
Changes.
Already changed pretty radically.
Yeah. What do you, Stacey, what do you think about? I mean, you have ads for your shows. You also charge for a newsletter, which I think is, or no, you don't.
I don't charge for my newsletter.
So you don't have anything you charge
should
for.
You? Should you, Stacey?
I don't have the confidence to charge.
Neither do I.
For my stuff. Yeah. I guess I know that sounds, I just, I don't like that model because I think, especially given if I were slightly more tradish, I would, and I am kind of tradish, but I also deal with like what I feel are really important issues that we should be talking about. So I want more people to talk about them and think about them. And I still do a lot of consumer facing stuff. So that's kind of why.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. I don't know.
That's why I hate to hear the notion that advertising might not. I love ad-supported free media
because it gives us freedom.
Yeah.
It gives us a lot, and I worry greatly about redlining quality media for just the privileged.
Yeah.
So this amazed me. So this was in Wired, which I do have to subscribe to because there's all kinds of things I want to read there.
I paid for Wired too, but I didn't pay for Bloomberg. I couldn't bring myself to do that.
No, I agree.
And you know, part of the reason was, God damn it, don't they make enough money on those terminals?
I know. I know.
And so but that's part of the reason why you don't go to the well four times, because I think as somebody who would buy this stuff, I'm not going to give them money. They just got venture capital. They have ads. It bugged me that Hulu had, I had to watch ads after I paid for it.
When I pay for the New York Times and the Washington Post, I'm not paying to buy content. I'm paying because I support their work.
So that's the difference. That is patronage then. Yeah, because I do that. Yeah.
So the future book is here, but it's not what we expected in Wired December 2018. So just out. So they say, Craig Mod says, this. I couldn't believe this, almost half of author earnings now come from independently published books.
Wow.
Independent books don't outsell big five books, but they offer higher royalty rates.
Yeah, that's the point.
70%. Versus 25%.
Right.
For the first time, perhaps since the invention of the printing press, authors and small presses have a viable.
Jeff, did you ever get 25% for a book?
No.
That's crazy.
It's 15%.
Yeah, at best. And it's not 15% of the cover price. It's 15% of what the bookstore pays.
And you give up 15% of your 15% to the agent.
Yeah. Okay, so that's really it's a low bar because it isn't hard to make more money when you publish yourself because the publisher is not taking the 85% or more of the revenue.
Yes, but you also don't do, I mean, they don't do marketing or things like that. Well,
they don't do marketing anyway.
They don't do marketing anyway. That was the big lesson to me with the publishers. Yeah.
If you're Danielle Steele, maybe you'll get a book tour and some marketing dollars. But any other book, you get maybe an editor.
Nothing.
Maybe an editor.
The lesson I tell other authors is you've got to hire your own publicist.
Yeah.
With your own money.
Yeah. That's why if you're doing that, you might as well hire an indexer and a proofer and a layout person and just do the whole thing yourself.
In the old days, you know, when I was writing books past, the way to get into the bookstore shelves had to be sold to the publisher.
You had no choice.
Right.
You didn't get an end cap on your own.
And now, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. I published 13 books with a publisher. You don't make any money at it. But
that's the other thing. If you reconsidered that kind of stuff now.
Yeah. It's all new. It's all a different world. Yeah.
And it'd be a business you control more. You can market it here.
I'm too tired.
Speaking of tired, you guys.
Thank you, Stacey Higginbotham. Everybody, go run. Subscribe. Stacey on IoT.com.
Hey, give her money.
Don't give her money. Just listen to the ads and buy the products. She and Kevin do such a great job covering IoT.
Yep.
You must listen. And then get her newsletter because that's free.
It is. It's free. And I'd like to think it's totally worth it.
It's totally worth it. It's awesome. I subscribe. Jeff Jarvis, he gets paid handsomely as director of the Townite Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. No, I don't know what he gets paid.
They pay me by the job title word.
Yeah, by the word. But he is awesome himself, and he publishes regularly at BuzzMachine.com and Medium. He's got numerous wonderful books which you should go buy, including Public Parts and What Would Google Do? And both of them join us almost every week for this show when they're not traveling. Will we see you both next week?
I will be at CES, so you will not see me.
CES.
But I am coming. Whoa. I know. Have you heard of it?
That's brave of you. Wow. There will be a lot of IoT stuff there, though.
There will be. And I'm coming on This Week in Tech on Sunday after CES. So
right on.
Oh,
that'll be great. Thank you for doing that.
I haven't been to CES.
Thank Karsten.
Yeah. How many years?
God, I don't know.
I think it's been 5 or 6, maybe 7 for me. It's been a while. We used to go every year and cover it, you know. We used to have a big booth on the floor and everything.
Wow, that's expensive.
It was. It was. That's why we stopped.
That's the South by Southwest.
Well, I think we're going to do South by this year.
Really?
Yeah. Should we all get together? This could be your last hurrah, Stacey.
Oh, for South by. I was like, dude, I'm not dying.
No, but you're
just
leaving Austin.
To Seattle.
You're leaving Austin. I think I'll let you know. I'll get back to you, but we've had some interest in doing the Capital One House again. And if we do that, we'd love to have you both there. We'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I might be in. Okay, I might be in Sweden during South by, but I might not be
because you want to escape.
This is so typical of Austinites.
Yeah,
they just get out of town.
I'm getting paid to talk.
Sorry, we'll get Wes Faulkner on instead.
There you go. Good. There's lots of great Austinites I can hook you up with.
Okay. Anyway, Sweden. That'll be fun.
I love Sweden. Oh, give me a Stockholm.
Jeff has a restaurant.
Stockholm and Helsinki.
I have a restaurant I love in Stockholm.
I know Helsinki's not in Sweden. Never been. I'm just going to the Nordic countries. But yes, I am going to Stockholm as well.
The Nordic countries, don't forget the amazing Bergen to Oslo train.
Woo,
woo. Oh, this is something about that hat, isn't it?
Thank you for joining us. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. We would love it if you'd stop by and watch live at twit.tv/live. I think we kicked the live stream. It froze, but we kicked it and got started up again. If you're watching live, join the chat room, irc.twit.tv. That's where all the other people watching live hang out. But you don't have to watch anything we do live. All of the shows we do are available on demand. That's the real way we expect you to consume our product at your convenience, at your leisure, when you want to, on your time frame. Just go to twit.tv/twig or subscribe in your favorite podcast application. There's audio and video you pick, but if you subscribe, you'll get it each week the minute it's available. Thank you so much for listening or watching, and we will see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.